The simpler the space, the calmer the mind. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. I got my voice back. Shitonishana. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am 15 years sober. I am an adult child of an alcoholic family. I realized that after dating two alcoholics named Brian back to back, which you can hear all about in my very first episode, which is required listening around here. And this is where we talk about what to do when you realize your childhood fucked you up a lot more than you thought it did. And yes, we curse here. You've been warned. So today we are diving deep into a topic that I'm sure many of y'all can relate to, and that is clutter. We're joined by Andrea Waite. She was a professional organizer for over 15 years. She is the author of the recently published book, Home in Harmony. So I have shared that one of the ways that my trauma, my adult child diseaseness manifested was through clutter. So this was between, we were trying to figure out when exactly this was. I'm pretty sure that it was in between Brian number one and Brian number two. And my apartment in San Francisco had gotten really, really out of control. Now, it wasn't very obvious. Like, it was behind closed doors. It was in closets. It was in drawers. But it was a total and complete shit show. And I knew that the chances that I was going to clean it all up myself was probably not very realistic. So I went on Yelp and searched for professional organizers and found Andrea. And she came over with her assistant and she went through everything, reorganized everything. She took everything with her. She donated everything. And we just really connected. We really hit it off. It's funny. One of the questions that I asked her, and what you'll hear in the interview, is that I asked her, do you ever have like retreads? Do you ever have people that you've, you know, organized for them and then they need you to come back? And after saying that, I actually realized that I did have her come back a couple years later. It was not like nearly what it looked like the first time that she came, but one of my closets got a little bit out of control again. And you're going to hear me share today that I currently have a closet that's a little bit out of control. So progress, not perfection, folks. But having this conversation with her, it really felt just like a warm hug. Just being so divinely led to this podcast and just thinking about the journey. And when she came to help me that day, you know, that was years and years and years before the idea to start this podcast would ever cross my mind. And it's good to be reminded, especially like when I'm struggling, going through a hard time. It's remembering things like this of how I am being divinely led and guided that helps me know that I'm gonna be okay no matter what. So let's talk a little bit about clutter. And I think that we can come at it from two different angles. So the first angle I want to talk about is from the perspective of negative excitement. So one of the laundry list traits, I think it's trait 9, is we became addicted to excitement. Now, initially, I think Tony A had it be we were addicted to fear, but then they changed it to we became addicted to excitement. Now, this excitement, it could be, you know, talking about like being an adrenaline junkie, but mostly what we're talking about here is negative excitement. So things that we do to manifest and create fear and unpleasant emotions in our life. So what does this look like? Being in toxic relationships, any form of an addiction, starting arguments, procrastination in all forms. So this is definitely my favorite form of negative excitement. So running late, you know, not opening our mail, not paying our bills, waiting until the last moment to get gas, putting off any adult type tasks. And so why do we do this? Why do we create this negative excitement in our life? Well, there's two things. One is that it is, you know, recreating the familiar feelings of chaos and dysfunction that we felt as children. I think it says in the Big Red Book, it talks about how we do these things to feel alive. And the other reason that we do it is that it is a way for us to perpetuate, you know, this toxic shame. It is a way that we shame ourselves. So when it comes to physical clutter, and I'm going to touch upon some other forms of clutter in a bit, but for now, let's just talk about physical clutter. Now, as it relates to, you know, it being a trauma response, as it being a form of negative excitement, there could be many different things that are going on here. So it could be an issue of, you know, compulsive spending and shopping. It can be a physical manifestation of the chaos and unmanageability that we feel internally. It can be a result of us being emotionally dysregulated. It could be related to our fear of letting things go, or perhaps having, you know, an intense emotional attachment to our things. It could be rooted in a scarcity mindset. It can also be ADHD related, right? That's definitely something that at the time that she came and organized for me, I didn't have my ADHD diagnosis, but that's definitely at play for so many of us. And then we have clutter as a form of dissociation. So a way for us to check out. It's a way for us to be distracted, right? So I can focus on the clutter and the mess instead of thinking about all the other damn issues in my life. I think for me, it probably is a little bit of both. I've definitely gotten a lot better, but as I said, there's a closet that is a little bit of a problem. But boy, does having a tidy and organized place make such a damn difference in every aspect of our lives. I'm more productive, I'm more creative, happy when shit is looking nice and neat and tidy. And so the last thing that I just wanted to touch upon was the other forms of clutter. So other than physical clutter, we can have mental clutter. So this can be, you know, constantly worrying, racing thoughts, difficult time focusing or making decisions. We can then have emotional clutter, which is just all of our unresolved and unprocessed emotions. This can be, you know, harboring resentments. Then we have, and this is another big one for me, folks, digital clutter. Fucking digital clutter. My email inbox is a nightmare. It is a nightmare, folks. It could also be like on your phone. Like how many pictures do you have on your phone? Overwhelming amount of like subscriptions that we have. And then we can have time clutter. Poor time management. Overcommitting yourself. Overscheduling. Not setting priorities. I definitely also struggle with time clutter. So, folks, I'm a clutter bug, I guess. I am a clutter bug. Like I said, it's looking pretty good around here. It's looking pretty good. But this closet needs some help, and I will show physical evidence on my social media, the before and after. Do I want to show the before? I don't know if I want to show the before. I'll show you the after. Maybe I'll show the before in the community. So yeah, let's get the damn show on the road. Go check out her book, Andrea's book. It's simple, it's clear, it's easy. She has a chapter for each room. Highly, highly recommend it. And please see links to her website in the show notes if you want to reach out to her. She is an amazing human being and just so grateful that my clutterness, my trauma response of being messy result in having this nice conversation today. First, let's talk about why you need to damn the join shit show, folks. This is my online community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. This is where you connect with other cool ass shit shows who are also on this journey to heal our unresolved childhood shit within this app. So we have an app. And within this app, there are a ton of different little subgroups that I think also makes this very attractive. So we have a group for shitshow parents, so people that are actively parenting. We have a group that is for childhood sexual abuse survivors. We have a group that's for those that are dealing with narcissists. Group for those in sobriety. We have another group that's for people who are into using psychedelics for healing. There's a bunch of shit in there. Oh, we have neurodivergent folks, for those of us with ADHD. So please, just do yourself a favor and check this place out. It is an amazing, amazing community where you will feel at home. People feel comfortable sharing anything. There is no judgment, no shame. This is a place where you truly can come as you are. We will love and accept you exactly where you're at. So do yourself a damn favor and damn the join shit. Just give it a try. Just give it a try. You can quit after a month. See the link in the show notes for a way to join. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. The first way that I'm going to introduce you as is that you pronounce your name the correct way.
You too.
Does it bother you as much as it bothers me?
No, not at all.
Okay. It drives me fucking nuts.
I met a woman yesterday, the Andrea is spelled A-O-N-D-R-E-A. I'm like, really? You're taking
How do you pronounce that?
She is Andrea. Hmm.
Okay, well, I'm okay with that if she wants to spell it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so former professional organizer, author, cancer survivor, badass. I have shared the story multiple times on the podcast of hiring you and that, you know, one of the, I guess I should say your book is Home in Harmony. So good.
Thank you very much.
And I'll include in the show notes and everything. One of the ways that my, I guess I didn't realize it at the time, but that a trauma response of mine was clutter. And I probably wasn't as very bad compared to most things. How would you say mine was? Mine was pretty, not too bad, right?
No, I don't. You know what? To be honest with you, I don't think anyone is that bad. Okay. Everyone thinks that it's worse.
Come on.
It's worse. Sure, in a way, but in a way not. What I would say is for when I saw your apartment, you just needed someone to come in and talk to you and walk through what was happening in your life and how it was being reflected in your possessions.
What do you remember from that? I don't know if this was after Brian number one or after Brian number two. Do you know when this was?
I think we were really between.
I think we were in the in-betweeny too.
I think we were in the in-between. There was still leftover Brian one hanging on. I don't know. I almost feel like actually you were talking about Brian number two, but hadn't met him. And this was an impetus at this point in time for you to, okay, I need to get my home life in order. You had an idea of what you wanted work-wise as well. We were figuring all of that out. Remember, just kind of, you know, after it's fall and all the leaves have fallen and the leaves are all over the place, I feel like that's what it was. Like there was just a little bit of sprinkling everywhere. You had a very good idea of what you had, but you just needed to pull it back together again. And you needed some help to do it. You know, I feel like one of the feelings I had when I was talking to you was that you really were going a lot on your own. There wasn't anybody that was really helping you and make you feel nurtured in a way. And so I think that you and I had this connection right off the bat that you knew I was smart and could get the job done, but that I was opening to listen to your journey to help you in that space and time of your life. Like you wanted it and it felt good. Like we were together for a while.
Yeah. And I think we made the sobriety connection.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I haven't had a drink in over 8 years in order to support my nieces and nephews that have sobriety challenges. And I thought the only way I knew how was to walk their walk. So, you know, when you go to a wedding, what do you say? You say, I don't drink alcohol. That's just plain and simple as that. I don't do drugs. And so it became a thing for you and I that we connected on it. And I will say personally, I'm really grateful for it. I can't imagine a 58 years old having a hangover ever. So for me, being sober was an incredible gift. And yeah, we connected on that for sure.
So tell the story of how you got into doing this.
Yeah, sure. So I am the youngest of 5 children. I grew up in New York in the North Shore of Long Island, a very affluent area. I have 3 brothers and a sister, and my father came from a very wealthy family. And so there was nothing spare of anything. Country club, skiing, private schools, all of that stuff. But at the time I'm 12 years old, my dad loses everything. And I go away to
What
summer.
happened?
I never really got the full story. I think it was probably stock market, real estate, the times of the 80s.
What did he
And
do for work?
he worked in real estate, but my father also came from a wealthy family.
Okay.
And family was everything to my father. My father had a twin brother. He went away to boarding school at the age of 7. So family was everything to my dad. And that really defines who I am as a person. So I went away to summer camp and I came home and we didn't live in the same house. And but we lived in a nice house. We always lived in nice houses. We moved my next probably 5 years from middle school to high school several times. It was always a nice home, had a swimming pool, but I knew money was stressful. I still went to my private schools, all of that.
Was it like hush? Like, what was it
I
talked,
don't even know.
discussed?
I think it was sort of discussed, but I feel like there was a lot of silence. My dad was always trying to make things fine at home, but I could feel his stress. So I went to college and I had to use student loans and all that stuff, which was shocking, you know. But and this my dad loved the school I went to because they had such a great student aid program. So I did that, went to college, got out, did the regular corporate job. But I was always doing things to help other people, Make-A-Wish Foundation, Special Olympics, all of this stuff. When September 11th happened and I had moved to San Francisco, September 11th happened, I realized I didn't want to be in ad sales anymore and I became a yoga teacher. I made basically $1 a day, but I loved it. I started to get to know people's inside challenges, who was trying to have a baby, who wanted a boyfriend who I started to get to know people in their inside, but I was making no money. And so I took some classes at City College and these guys hired me to do accounting. And when I went to their home, I couldn't understand, like, why do you have dog food in your office? And so I started
I
thinking,
did
like,
not. I don't think I remember the accounting connection.
and so, yeah, so I went, yeah, I love numbers, very logic oriented like you. And should have been an accountant. One day they say, can you help us with our secret? And I'm like, oh my God, what does that mean? Two successful gay men in San Francisco, what could be their secret? And they opened up their garage and it was filled. And I thought, oh my God, they think I'm Oprah with a team of people. So I itemized everything and helped them. And it was really interesting to see what they had in their garage. It was their history. There were these two men from the Midwest and they had like their little preppy young clothes, and then they had their leather chap clothes, and then they had old antique furniture, and really going through it, it was a lot of fun. And we were able to categorize it, decide what stays, what goes. And one day they came home and they said, our car has been stolen. And I said, no, look in the garage. We could now park the car in the garage. So after that, I thought, well, I can do this. And so my very first client was a woman who lived in Sonoma. God, it was ringing bells with me. She very wealthy woman. She's married, three girls, Palm Beach, Florida.
How'd you get connected to her? Like, how'd you get the work?
It was a referral from somebody that said, I know this person coming to California. She needs some help. I don't know what that meant in organizing. So she was living with her daughter in Sonoma, and I went up there, and it was crazy. Like, here she was, her house was in foreclosure, and yet she had things like storage units. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? She wanted to save these Persian rugs. So she was spending money on these Persian rugs. I'm like, yeah, but you could use the money to pay the mortgage and not lose the house. So it was great working with her. So she was my bread and butter. And so from there, I just started working with people one by one. And then one day someone said, wow, you have great reviews on Yelp. I was the number one professional organizer on Yelp. I didn't even know it existed. And I did it for 15 years, and it's really been the most incredible experience of my life. Having been a person who lived in a house with stress, where I felt like hiding what was happening in my
Yeah, I was going to
home.
ask about the shame element.
Well, it was, I think, almost fear. Like, it's a fear. I never wanted to say anything because I loved my parents so much. I didn't want to make them feel bad and add to their stress. So here I was going into people's homes, and immediately I could see their fear and stress. Oh, they'd apologize to me, a stranger. I'm so sorry about what my house looks like. I'm like, there's no need to apologize. Let's just make it better. Let's just get it better. I don't care what that looks like for you. Even if it's just you have your bed so you can sleep on, I don't care, but let's make it better. So my journey as a child absolutely brought me to this place of being able to help people and to be honest and to be vulnerable and to be real and to tell them, you're not a bad person because your house is a mess. Let me help you. It's the biggest thing that I wish people could take away, really, is if you're over your head, ask for help. It's so meaningful. Even if two, you know, different moms or two different dads, you swap houses and you do your friend's house and they do yours if you can't afford it. Like, just getting help makes such a difference. So really, I mean, as you can see, I'm passionate about it. Over 15 years, I had a 5-year-old tell me she felt like a new person. I had a 7-year-old stop wetting his bed. I had a 55-year-old come out of the closet. I had a 75-year-old tell me, I want to prepare my house for death because I don't want people to see it. We made that house so much better that he was one of the earlier HIV diagnosed people. He eventually, after we make that house great, fixed it up, sold that house. He moved to Palm Springs and he's dating. He told me he was dying by December and now he's living. And so that part of the organizing process, oh my God, it's priceless. Really, it's incredible.
Was it all learning on the job?
Yes, absolutely. All learning on the job, for sure. There is an organization called NAPO, the National Association of Professional Organizers. I did take a couple of classes, but I really knew when I went into people's homes. I have a very good sense after being a yoga teacher and working so intimately with people. I have a very good sense of people and what they need and the help they need. And really just to be a listener. I mean, I had one woman, when I walked into her house, oh my gosh, the bathroom, the back wall was taken out because they never fixed the water thing and this raccoon had come in and attacked the cat and cat was missing half a tail. So she tells me this story and I'm like, oh my gosh, all right, well, we need to get a person in to fix that wall. When I left that day, she said to me, you're the first person that never raised their eyebrows when they saw that. And I was like, no, of course not. Like, give me a break. So yeah, it was very organic. I will say, as for as much as I feel my clients learn from me, a lot of them often will text me and they'll say things around the house, like, what would Andrea say? Or what would Andrea do? I also learned as well.
I'm sure.
You know, that first client that I went into, you know, in Sonoma, okay, she had recycling all over the kitchen. I'm like, can't you just let me take the recycling out? But I wasn't listening. She wanted me to help her with her paperwork. And so I also learned, like, my perfect is not the same as someone else's. You know, in the beginning, yes, I wanted to make a museum home for people, but that's not realistic. You know, creative folks, they are told you have to put everything away. That doesn't work for creative people, actually. For most people, they need to see what they have. It just needs to be organized better. So all of those things of, like, I called it the Rubik's Cube of meeting people. Like, all right, maybe you don't want all your reds on one side, but maybe we could make a cool pattern with the different ones. Like, it was always this kind of detective work that I found incredibly fascinating, really. And the bottom line, I'll tell you right now, we all have too much stuff. That's it. It's really what it is.
So as you're going through the process and you're getting more experience, is there a shift in your perspective as far as, like, the psychological aspect of it?
Absolutely.
Like, what kind of initially going in just thinking that people are just messy and then realizing how much of this is so deeply rooted?
Yeah.
Can you talk about what was like for you to have that realization?
Every single client that I went into, it was constantly asking yourself, what is the root issue here happening? You know, and then with that, whatever was the root cause about what caused it, also going, all right, like a doctor, what's the prescription for this to make it okay? So for instance, I worked with a woman who she and her husband had been married. They had triplets. Their house burned down when the triplets were being born, and there was huge trauma in that house. So when I arrive on the scene, they rebuilt the house. There's just stuff everywhere. It's just everywhere. But the root of all of this buildup in the house was fear. The fear for the mom that something was going to happen again. She had major, major trauma while delivering triplets. And the fear of, you know, everything being perfect and everything being taken away. And, you know, here she was going to have this beautiful family, this beautiful house. This house burnt down. And the husband, I also believe, struggled with some sobriety things as well. Because I see it all, right? Like I see it, you know? And so the first day I meet her, she's in her pajamas. She's not ready for the day. She knows I'm coming. And even though she had said to me, I can't wait for you to come, not so much. And so I looked around and I said to her, okay, you're going to sit here and have a cup of coffee and you're not going to do anything. I'm going to go and I'm going to, because she didn't have laundry detergent, I'm going to Walgreens and buy a case of laundry. We're just going to do laundry all day. I'm not going to charge you for it. Nothing. We're just going to get your house back in order. So each house that I went into, each home, there was some root of trauma in that big craziness of abundance. Really, you know, the stories go on and on. The young gay man that's not accepted by his family, he creates this home. It was wonderful. He had all this stuff all over the place, but he had this huge Barbie collection. But he loved the Barbie collection, but he was embarrassed by the Barbie collection. His family didn't accept him for his lovely person that he is. And we get the house back in great order. And I'd say to him, okay, it's time to take Barbie out of the closet, which is funny that this whole Barbie thing is going on now. And we made shelves. We helped him to own who he was in his home. Even in his own home, he couldn't own who he was because of the rejection from his family. So each time I went in, I'm looking, what is it? What's happening here in this house? And it crosses ages, ethnicities, how much money you have, all of that. Look at homeless people in San Francisco. Their tents are filled with stuff. I think, wow, I would have nothing if I was that person. But that's not the case. They've had trauma. They're holding on to everything that they get, even if it's crap. So there is a root in all of this. And then when you look at that root to that solution, so this mom and dad with the triplets, part of their solution was dad needed to also be a part of keeping the house going. They also had a 6-year-old kid. The 6-year-old needs to help out. So it's looking at what's the cause and what's the best way that they can deal with this situation that everyone is involved in the solution, not just one person. It's amazing.
Well, I would think though that, what is the solution is like a lot of fucking therapy too, right? Because like, I mean,
Absolutely.
have you,
Every session I had was all therapy.
Well, what about though? Like, I mean, and maybe people don't because they're embarrassed or they feel ashamed, but have there been people that, you've gone back several years later and they're in the same, like, have you had retreads?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are people, but they never completed it the first time around, right? They never got sober completely. They got to the 80% mark. So, you know, I came in, helped them. They were good. We're good to go. But it's like anything, you know, you go to the supermarket and someone puts out a shopping cart in the wrong place. Then you come out, there's two shopping carts and now there's some garbage. Then there's garbage and there's whatever. It attracts it. So if you only get to 80%, you don't get yourself completely on board. Not only do you add 20 more percent of crap, you get 30% more. I mean, the Biggest Loser television show, the people that lost all that weight, the second they got off that show, they were trying to not only keep the weight, but lose the weight that they knew they were future going to get. So you really, for people that in order to have success in really making all of this happen, yes, you need to hit all the things. You need to have a, if you really have emotional issues associated with your crap, you need to see a therapist. And there were people that I had said, I am not the right solution for you. You need to see someone first. And then I am part of that person's prescription to say, you need an organizer to come in. It's why I don't really like those television shows so much
So,
where they.
okay, can you give me some examples, like an example of that and why you
Oh.
said that? And is this like for extreme hoarding cases?
Yes. Yes. I worked with a lady. She was referred to me by an old yoga student. She belonged to all the A's, OA, AA, NA. I mean, she was in all of them. Lovely, lovely, lovely lady. I pulled up at her house and, you know, I'm curious why she, nothing had ever left that house in 58 years. I'm curious why now? So, and everything, you know, everything in my path built on something I learned before. So I come up to the house, it's an old Victorian San Francisco. And again, nothing left in 58 years. So walked into the house, you really couldn't. It was a straight up stairs. There was a small path, and she comes to meet me. We'll call her Jane. And I said, okay, Jane, what's going on? And I can see her walk. And I said, are you having me in because you're having hip replacement surgery? And she looked at me, she said, yes. So that meant the only reason why she was having someone come in was because she needed to have someone come and give her physical therapy. So she wasn't in the mindset
I
of
want to change this, yeah.
no, not at all. So what I did, because I can never leave someone completely, I made the house so that a therapist could come in and treat her. But after that, I told her I can't see her until she gets professional counseling. Because I mean, the car, I mean, plus, and I knew she was in all these groups already, but she wasn't seeing anybody as a doctor or a therapist, whatever. She was going to meetings, which was fantastic. She loved the meetings, but her car was unsafe, you know, all of those things. So for her, I knew I wasn't the right person for her at that time. There was one other guy, this was early on. And when I went to his place looked pristine from the outside. It looked like an old 1950s house, except over the window into the house, there was a piece of paper, like old newspaper. And when I walked in, every cabinet door was open in the kitchen. And the living room was, it stepped down and there was no furniture in the living room. It was all kitty litter with kitties running around. Cats going crazy and
I think
wild.
you told me about that.
So
How many
I knew,
cats?
oh God, if I could, I mean, I'm sure there were hidden cats too. I would say there were at least 10 cats running around in this like big open sandbox. But I knew, and I told him, I was honest. I said, I don't think I'm the right solution for you. I think that you need professional help. You know, you need to see someone like, and he did say, he said he knew it wasn't, when he looked at it, because I'm always curious. I'm like, so what do you see when you see this? You know, I'm just curious. He goes, I know it probably seems bad to people. I'm like, you're right. It does seem bad to people. And so I do think you need professional help. But 9 times out of 10, I took every job.
What do you think? How would you define when something gets too hoarding versus just being cluttered?
Good question. You know, I think the clutter and the hoarding actually can be really interchangeable. What I would say the better question is, you know, when do you think that you need help? And I think that when your home life creates such anxiety and it's not a place of respite, and I'm not even talking the whole place, even just your bedroom, but when it's a place that, you know, I hear people say, I don't want to go home to, or I am embarrassed if someone stopped by because of, that's when I say it's time to get some help. Clutter is a bunch of stuff. Hoarding is a whole new level of emotional filling in the gaps of things. You know, typically it's people that have had some kind of trauma in their life. Like for me, it was, you know, we were still living in this, you know, facade of everything was perfect and it wasn't. But for a lot of people who don't grow up with things like, you know, the internet and things being cheap, their homes are filled up. When it's overtaking everything about your life, that it isolates you from living a life. And it's incredibly sad.
Yeah. So before we started officially recording, you were talking about the gal who had over 1,000 pairs of jeans. So a lot of that too, you're seeing a lot of compulsive spending combined in there. What percentage of that do you, of the people that you've helped, what part of it do you think is also a spending issue?
Oh, I think now, you know, with all the being able to have things delivered to you immediately, you're seeing more and more. I would say at least 60 to 70% of people, it's just, you know, they're online at night and they don't turn off the computer, and all those websites are super easy and they promise you it's going to arrive the next day. I did a workshop last week of very lovely ladies, all educated women raising families, and one woman said, you know, she said, yeah, I have such a hard time with my daughter. She's 12. I'm like, she's 12. What's the big deal? She said, yeah, when she orders something at night, she gets annoyed that it's not there the next day. And I looked at her, I'm like, but you're the person that can, that you're the only one that can control that. She's 12. So the instant gratification of filling up. I mean, people said during the pandemic, everything went away. That is bullshit. I just don't buy it one bit. I went with my neighbor to one of those big box stores to do a return, and it's one of those stores where you can like buy clothes and food and all of it in the same place. The place was packed. Shopping carts were packed. So the biggest thing that I say to a lot of people that are, the compulsive shopping and filling in the gap at night, turn off your computers at night. Turn them off. Turn it off. It is such mindless time, but it's hard for people. They're getting a fill from it, that instant thing that can happen right away, and we've all done it.
So would you say that there are some, I'm just wondering on like themes or trends that you've seen. So like we have the compulsive spending, the buying the new shit, the like things that have not been opened, clothes with tags on them. And then I would imagine there's another category of people where it's like not throwing things away. Like what would you say that there's like some certain buckets?
For sure. It's generational. It's where we fall in life. So, like, my mother is 94. She lived through the Depression. And so, for those folks, we heard these expressions. I spent good money on it. Well, what does that mean exactly? As opposed to bad money? I spent good money on it. And so, they couldn't throw anything away on nothing because it could be used for something. So, you have that person. That's a big bulk of people now who are probably anywhere between, I'd say 75 and older. They have a real hard time of getting rid of anything because it could mean something.
And so how do you
Then
confront that?
you really confront it by looking at, because for people, that age that want to downsize, and I have a friend who's going through this now, it's encouraging that person to think about what can come to them by not having this big albatross of the house of all this stuff that you have to take care of all the time. Instead, you can have a next chapter of your life where you have a smaller place. It's easier to clean. You don't have to go up and downstairs, and maybe you could go travel the world. You're not anchored to this old house of memories that no, and no one wants the stuff anyway. And then you have the next category of people. They're typically, let's say, 40 to the 70s, and they're the sentimentalists. Oh, that was my first whatever. That was my da, da, da. They're keeping everything based in memories and feelings. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But what I do have the problem with, it's if you are keeping all this stuff, A, how are you storing it? B, why are you storing it? Do you even know what's in there? And C, is there a way we can store it better? So a lot of times, you'd see someone and they'd say, oh, this is my great grandmother's china, but it's in a bin in the garage. The intention of a china plate is to eat food, to put it on a table. So, what I do in that situation, come on, let's take that china out. Let's use it tonight for dinner. The sentimentalist is helping them to actually see what they have and utilize it differently. Even if it's, I collected a bunch of thimbles. Okay, let's just get them out. What's the point of storing all this stuff? So that's the sentimentalist. Then the next bucket of people is people that think they are something when they're not. They're the aspirationals, like, I'm going to take on being the best trainer and I'm going to get all the weights, or I'm going to be, my whole look is about jeans and a cute sweatshirt, and that's my thing. It's we have these perceptions of who we are, and we shop basically accordingly. The other thing we're told every single day in media and all of this stuff, live your best life, but you need the following great things from this list of favorites. So we're also, we put people aspirationally. I mean, look at how many, celebrities and all that stuff, they wear things, and the next day you see everybody happens to wear it around the country. I mean, when my husband starts to notice a brand that people are all wearing it of all sorts of things, wow, that was a really good advertising campaign because we're told we're supposed to have it. It makes us be a certain way. Really. For me, I'm free of all of that stuff. You could pretty much ask me for anything and I would say it's yours. You can have it.
What about growing up? Was your house pretty tidy?
It was, but we had a maid that she came. My mother is a Virgo, though. Virgos, no offense to Virgos, but even though they pride themselves on being very organized, Virgos like things. So my mother definitely had things. In my house, though, the really big thing that I've gotten away from is how we show our love is through gifts. So, like, when I would go and organize homes and people would say, oh, I don't have a whole lot of storage, but then they have a closet. for backup, just in case gifts someone came by. What the heck is that? So in my family, gifts were a thing. And so it's still a hard thing to get my mom not to shop all Christmas long for gifts and things like that. To show the way we showed love was through giving things. And I think a lot of people do that. And then what happens is then the recipient feels obligated to keep it because it was a gift from that person. So my big goal in a lot of the jobs I did was stop being the what if giver. And you can say no if somebody gives you something that you don't want. Those two things are really difficult for people.
Do you think that there are any, and in writing this book, like either big misconceptions regarding clutter or big misconceptions regarding organizing?
Yeah, there's a few things. Well, as I said before, for artists, everything needs to be put away. That doesn't work for them. You need a better system. Another big misconception people do is that they need to buy organizing bins right away. They get super excited and they want to go to that special organizing store. But if you don't know the bulk of your things, getting those organizing bins are not helpful. And having so many bins just means having so many things. So instead, let's really look at what you have first. Other things that people think, if you buy in bulk or if you buy in sale, you're saving money. Okay, that applies to a person that has absolutely no debt. Because if you're buying in bulk on things that you're not using right away and you have debt, you're paying interest on a credit card of things that you're not using for months ahead. The on sale items, on sale? If it's on sale, most likely it'll be on sale again. We don't, unless you're living in the wilderness, you can get it on sale again. The other thing people get scared about, and that's the big one for organizers, is that if an organizer comes in, they're going to tell you everything must go away. Oh, that's ridiculous. We all live in things. But instead, it's living your life with intention. Like people, I think they have an assumption that I have nothing in my house. And in the beginning, yes, I did. After I would empty out a whole house of stuff, I would come home and get rid of a bunch of stuff. But no, we have things. It's just, what is the intention behind the things that you have? And living a life of meaning and purpose. And that is, it's just, if we can do that, and even in our home, and apply that into our day-to-day life, wow, that's amazing. And then the other huge misconception is that hiring an organizer is expensive. People that live in disorganization, I'm going to tell you, spend money on things they wouldn't have to if they were organized. You can't find something, what do? They just buy it again until they find it. So they overbuy when they don't need to. So hiring an organizer, and I can't tell you how many jobs I did in the last 15 years, we actually found money in the house. One guy, he was having trouble paying rent. We found an envelope of $1,000 cash he didn't even know he had. So that idea of it's expensive, no, I think you actually save money in the end. In every which way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And It just does make such a fucking big, I mean, it really impacts every aspect of your life.
Absolutely.
My productivity, my creativity.
Mental health. Yes. Yeah. By being able to know when you come home that your house feels good to you. And I'm not talking pristine. I'm not talking a museum. What I'm talking about is when you go into your bedroom and there's not stuff all over the floor and not stuff all over the bed, but it's a nice reprieve. That's everything. To be able to sleep, you know, to be able to cook a meal. Families would say to me all the time, I have a hard time connecting with my kids. I'd look at their dining room table, it'd be covered with stuff. And I was like, okay, well, let's just try this experiment. Let's just clear off everything off this dining room table so that you can have a meal with your kids tonight. Amazingly, they said, oh my God, we had such a great conversation. Because when you eat, it's, you're not one-on-one, so how was school today? It's an organic conversation. Even if you have more than one kid, those two kids start talking to each other about stuff. That's how you pick up on it. So those benefits that can happen, it's life-changing. It's life-changing. Less fighting in the house, less tension. Where is the homework? Where are my books? We're going to be late for work today. I can't find my glasses. All of that happens in chaos. But if everything has somewhat of a place, it makes such a difference.
Okay. Really. So here I'm going to be vulnerable. So this closet in my office right now, it's a fucking shit show. So how do I start?
You start by pulling it all out. Everything in every project that you do, it gets worse before it gets better. You need to, first of all, put you're a busy, dynamic young woman. You need to put it on your calendar, just like you would for any kind of meeting that you go to in life. You're meeting your accountant, you put it on your calendar. This is a meeting with yourself. You put it on your calendar, you turn off your phone. There's no distractions. I like to do a little meditation beforehand, clear the head so you're not all scrambled, because you're going to be frustrated at yourself, like, damn it, how did it get like this? You're going to take it all out. You're going to group everything that's alike. Then you're going to clean the inside of that closet, make it look nice again. That already, oh my goodness, just sets the pattern. And then I want to ask you to ask yourself, what of the stuff is necessary? Put that stuff away. And then part B, look at what's left and ask yourself, is it time to let it go? But you got to pull it all out, and you're going to be so happy when you do. I wish I was there. I could do it for you.
No, I should do it myself. It'll be good for me. So what about what are some questions like when what are you asking somebody when you want them to throw? Because there was a few times I know you pushed me and I was just like, fine, throw it out. Like, what are these questions? What are these things that we need to consider as to whether it's time to just throw something out or not?
Yeah. Well, the questions that you're asking yourself is, what is the intention of keeping this? Why am I keeping this? What is it for? You know, I had a lady last week at a workshop, and she, to her candor and honesty, she's like, I have just way too many clothes. But she keeps clothes as a memory, right? So she has jeans that she wore. I think she was probably about 35. She wore these jeans at 15. And so it's digging a little bit about these. I mean, Nicole, my assistant, was like, get rid of them. And I'm like, hold on, hold on. Let's find a little. I want to know a little more. I want to tell me more. There's a great author, Kelly Corrigan. Tell me more. So I want to tell, I had her tell me more. And she said, well, I had a great date when I wore those jeans. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's great. So a couple people were like, we'll take pictures of it. I'm like, eh, okay, that's all right. But then we get the picture clutter. I'm not a big fan of the picture clutter. And I said, well, can I ask you an honest question? And she said, yes. I said, do those jeans still fit? She goes, yes. I'm like, oh my God, congratulations. Wow. Okay, good for you. All right, I want you to try an experiment. I would like you to actually take those jeans out and wear them. And I want you to go out and I want you to get some other feelings from it, you know, other memories of it currently. And then ask yourself at that point, do they come into the rotation, right? Are they part of the thing? Or are you like, you know what? I'm not a 17-year-old girl. It's time for me to let go. But by reigniting and connecting with that earlier memory, now she can bring it forward, and she'll never forget because now they're married together, and she's never ever going to forget them. So for me, it was always, what's the intention behind it? Why are you keeping it? How are you keeping it? What's your hope for keeping it? Like, what do you think long term for it? You know, because there are some people that think, well, I mean, I had a mom in Marin. She saved all of her kids' clothes from when they were kids, and she wanted to give it to them later on in life. Well, when they were about 16, 17, I said, you know what? It's time to bring the kids in and see if they're going to want to keep anything. They knew exactly the pieces that they wanted. They knew exactly. They knew they remembered wearing them. And I'd say three quarters of the stuff, it all went away. Because now there's kids now today that can wear the stuff that's been in storage forever. So it's really just asking those, like, tell me a little bit more. What's this story? And there's something about me. I think people know I am not judgmental at all. So even before I even ask questions, people tell me their honest truth about what's going on in the house. I mean, I get it pretty much every single time. I mean, there's never been a consultation, which I did for free, that didn't last less than an hour, because people want to tell you why it is. They know, most people know, but they're scared and they're embarrassed and they're emotional and all that stuff. And I mean, I can't tell you how many shoulders, you know, come on, give me the cry. We're gonna make it better. You just need help, you know. We need to put the oxygen mask on you now. We got to help you to take care of yourself. And then if there are other people in the house, how they can also help out as well. You know, it shouldn't be left up to one person.
Yeah, the other thing I didn't realize at the time when you were helping me, it was like I didn't realize I had ADHD.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I mean, nowadays, and the more and more I look back at different clients and what I did for them, it was good. I was able to really like figure out this right solution for that person. Now, when I look back at some of those individuals, I realize that was definitely a diagnosis for a lot of them. At least 20%. at least for sure. And by having systems in place that really worked for them, oh my God, it was life-changing. It's just we all see things differently, you know? There's some people they want everything in order in a drawer. There are some people that like to see everything they have. So a person with ADHD, it was a very different setup. It's this is only this lives here. Every time you go there, you know that's there. And when it's not, you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
Something's awry.
That's where it shows up for me is drawers and closets.
Oh yeah. I worked with an engineer from Google. And he was commuting from Napa. The marriage went bust. Napa to Google is very far. So he moved into San Francisco, hired me to set up his home. And we're in the kitchen, kind of on the outskirts of the kitchen, tons of drawers. And he said to me, Andrea, every time I go in this drawer, I think there's going to be silverware. And I'm like, okay, go get it. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't care where it is in the house. If every time you go in this drawer and you think there's supposed to be silverware, put the silverware there. He's like, that's how this works. I'm like, yep, for you, this is how it works. It makes sense for you. This is how it works. What
What
a
about
difference.
where does someone start if they're gonna get your book? And do you just pick any room? What if people seem so
Really?
fucking overwhelmed? What do they do?
I really, with my book, what I did, and I had, when I first started, I reached out to this guy who's a professional organizer in the Oprah world. His name is Peter Walsh. He kind of virtually mentored me and he said, do the bedroom first. And so that's how I started the book. I did the book, and no one knows this, so you're the first person to ask me this. I did the book in the order of the rooms that I would organize in. Just that's me, and I feel like what's important. I really do believe your bedroom is very important first, is to like, and when you go into your bedroom, you say, what is the intention of this room? The intention of this room, most likely sleep, rest, maybe connection to someone else. But everything else that doesn't belong in that environment, it needs to go somewhere else. We'll work about that. Get your room in order. The next room I think that's really important is your kitchen. I think a kitchen reveals so much. I mean, I worked with a young woman, totally struggled with an eating disorder, you know, really wants to eat healthy food. Her kitchen was a disaster. All of her cabinetry was filled with diet food, but it was diet food that came in cardboard boxes. Didn't even need to be in the cabinets. She filled up the whole thing. She never ate those. They looked disgusting. She never ate that food. So it took us a couple of visits where I finally got her to, okay, can we please just take all of this stuff out and really make a kitchen that feeds you with food? From there, I like the bathroom. I think the bathroom is another really, like, these are all like for me, the really, if I'm really starting out, like the important rooms, like the heart and soul is your bedroom, your
Kitchen and
kitchen.
bathroom.
Yeah. I mean, and the bathroom, gosh, I mean, people just overbuying all that stuff. Even if all you do with the bathroom is you go in, you throw out all the empty recycling of hair conditioners that are three deep, you know, but start, I believe, with your bedroom, really. Get a good night's sleep. How many people struggle with sleep? One of my first clients, she couldn't understand why she couldn't sleep. I went into her bedroom and her house was in foreclosure. She had all the paperwork next to her bed. You have paperwork, it's written in your formal name, capitalized. It's like it's yelling at you. So I'm like, can we please just take this out of the room? Took it all out. She slept that night. Slept that night. Crazy. I mean, the little boy who stopped wetting his bed, his
Yeah,
parents,
tell that story.
amazing. Their brother and sister, 5 and 7. The dad was a hoarder, and the mom just got too overwhelmed,
How
and it
bad
just
was it?
terrible. It was just there was just stuff everywhere. I mean, his little room, he had a bunk bed, it was just filled with stuff. So I did the sister's room, so cute, 5 years old, and every little hair clip I found, I would stick in my head over the course of the day. My head was filled. The mom was crying the whole day. I'm the worst mom. I'm the worst mom. I'm like, you're not the worst mom. You're the best mom because you're saying, I need help. What we're doing is not working. You're not a bad mom at all. You're an amazing mom. So did the little girl's room. And at the end, I put up a little hook by the door. She goes to school, comes home, she twirls around, and then she hangs up her jacket on the hook and she says out loud, I feel like a new person. She's days old on the planet. She's 5. The brother is 7. And the teacher had said about both children, smart kids, disorganized. And I thought, how the hell did teachers know disorganized children? But they do. So the boy, I left him a little note. I said, I promise I'll be back tomorrow. I didn't want him to feel left out. His room took 2 days. And the big struggle was couldn't find his glasses in the morning, so we made a little stand next to the bed. But we emptied all the stuff out of his room. He really loved kites. We hung a kite and put up a kite picture. Amazing. And I said to the mom, you know what? I don't have kids, but I think this stops. Not only did it stop that day, but the next night he invited a friend over. Excuse me. Amazing, amazing life challenges. It's just incredible by having ownership of his space.
One thing I've realized that I have an issue with is digital clutter.
Yeah, it's hard. It really is. And it's an active job. Even for myself, it's an active thing. That's the fear of it going away, but then you really can't access anything of it. With digital clutter, I would absolutely ask for help. It's a really difficult, even if it's with just you and your friends and you both pick each other's computers and phones and stuff, but the digital clutter is crazy. Nowadays, what I do with people, if I really see a picture that's great, I'm like, print this. You can actually look at it. But the digital clutter is only going to get more so as people keep adding more and more memory to their computers or the cloud, all of that stuff. For
Yes,
me, a trip to
email, just Word files. It
emails, all
just,
of that stuff.
yeah. And like not organizing things well, it's just a free for all. And again,
It
I
is
think
a
it's
free, it
ADHD.
is a free for all. And really with, I mean, I would imagine with your podcast, your business now, you're getting so much in, it's an overflow. So it's really looking at your system. If I ever get to Florida, I'll take a look at it. It's looking at what you have and going, all right, how do we organize it in a way that works for you and your mindset? Like some people are definitely clear. Like my husband loves a good folder system on his computer, but there are other people that love having 1,000 things across their screensaver. So it's figuring out again in your world what works best for you. You have an accounting brain, so it's orderly. I would think if we set up systems for you that you could put stuff in, that would help.
The problem is sticking with the systems.
I know you have to keep practicing it. You have to keep doing it over and over and over again. It is an absolute practice and one that a lot of us don't want to deal with. So it's like the closet in your office. You got
Yeah.
to put it on your calendar. Like I am now dealing with my digital clutter.
Yeah, I would think that there's a lot of connections between this organization stuff and like in habits. I think about like the book Atomic Habits, and that there's a
Absolutely. I love that
huge
one.
connection in the two things.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that we lose sight of. I mean, it's what I would say to families all the time with their kids go to school. Oh, I can't handle all the kids, the toys, and all this stuff. I'm like, practice what they do at school. When they go to school and it's playtime, they take the playthings out, and then there's 15 minutes scheduled into playtime. The playthings go back. It's all habits. My woman with that had the eating disorder. She never learned like sitting down every night and having a meal. Like she was always eating on the fly and she was always on a diet. So it's learned behaviors, but it absolutely can change if you want it. Like this is not for everybody. There are some people that are perfectly fine. I have many friends who don't ever want me to come over to their homes because they're like, our house is a mess. I'm like, I don't care. I absolutely don't care. All of this is for people where it's disrupting their lives, that they want more. That's why they're listening to your podcast. They want more. They're eager to learn how to live better, healthier, fuller lives. And it's absolutely possible.
Are you a good habit builder?
Yes, I'm a very good habit builder. Yes. But again, it's because I set in my mind the intention of what it is that I want to get from it. I hiked the Camino de Santiago
Yeah, I
last
want to
year.
hear about that.
It's 500 miles from France to Spain. I was
Did you do the whole
24.
thing? Well,
I
there's
did
a
the whole
couple
thing.
different versions of it, right? Or
I have done a few of
sections.
the versions, but I did the French way the whole thing. But the habit I had to start doing was I had to start walking every day. I didn't want to last year. It rained here a lot. I was not into it, but I knew I would only benefit once I started the hike. So that
Did you
the
do all
habit
alone?
I did. I went alone and my husband came for the last 5 days. It was fantastic. But the
How long
habit,
was your before him? He came. How long were you
I
hiking?
was, let's see, I hiked for 39 days. So I was on my own for 34 days. Oh, it was fantastic. Oh, life changing.
Did
See,
you have
when
a
you,
lot of Scott, who is in the community, who I'm sure is listening to this right now? He talked all about
the tortilla. But you were he did the Spanish, so you were in the French, so never mind.
No, but I went to Spain. I went
Yeah.
France to Spain. Yeah. So what did he talk about? The
The torch,
tortillas
the yeah, like well, the potato, the
and
egg
the
and the
egg.
potato. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your listener's name?
His name's Scott.
Okay. Hi, Scott. You'll have to share with your friends. I have a Camino book coming out next month.
I love it.
It's a guidebook on how to prepare. But those habits, when we want to establish habits, we have to figure out what the intention is. You know, when people say, I want to lose weight, well, it's the intention. I want to feel healthy. I want to look healthy. I want to be well. That's a pretty good builder. If I want to look great in front of my friends, those habits are not as easy to do. You know, if I want my house to be a certain way, we got to start applying the habits. But I will say, getting a professional organizer in really helps to clear the slate a lot. So it makes the habits easier to keep going, but you got to do it right from the start because otherwise it's a slippery slope.
Do you have any interesting stories from your hike that you want to share? Any synchronicities or divinely inspired actions?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll give you one just to bring it all together.
Please.
So when I was out hiking, you meet people along the way, and I met this couple, lovely couple, and they were hiking with their daughter and a daughter's friend. Really nice couple. So Jim and I, we were talking, and the wife was not interested in doing the Camino. So she was always far ahead. And I was sensitive to that because, you know, he's a married man, I'm a married woman, whatever, all those old school things. So they keep going, and finally I say to him, you know, I think you should go and heck catch up with your wife. You know, just she's right up there. I'm sure I'll see your daughter come along. Well, when he and I were talking, he had asked me about if I had ever known anybody that had taken their own life and all of that stuff. And I said, yes, I had a very good friend and it was very difficult. So we end our conversation, and it was interesting. He was so, I don't know, people are like that with me. They really want to talk to me about real things, strangers. So he went on his way. And well, the daughter came along with her friend, and I have been referencing my dear friend Gabby, who lost her life and miss her every day. And this couple come up, these two women come up, one's a daughter and the daughter's friend. And I say to the daughter, oh my gosh, I haven't met your friend yet. And they were so cute. They were singing and twirling in the rain, young 21-year-olds, and I could hear them a mile away singing The Sound of Music. So the friend goes to introduce herself and she goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I guess I haven't met you. My name is Gabby. And I had just been talking about Gabby the whole time. So kept going on and on. And I get to the end of the Camino. And I had been making this scarf all weekend. And finally, I meet the woman who I've been walking with, and she wasn't into it at all.
The wife.
Yep. And I give it to her. I give her the scarf and took a long time to find her. There was a lot of synchronicity. Turns out she was staying in San Francisco hotel. I live in San Francisco. It's very Camino-like. But I get her the scarf and she said, I've been looking all along because I wanted to give a gift to my friend who died. And the friend's name was Andrea. The Camino, it's amazing. There's so many expressions with the Camino. The Camino provides is absolutely positively the truth. It's unbelievable. It's like an experience no other in the world. You meet the most incredible people. There's not politics talk. They're not, you should do this or that. It's kindness. It's looking out for each other. It's beautiful. It's caring. And besides, getting married was the best thing I ever did in my life. Really.
So that comes
And
out in
I,
April, or
yeah, it comes out in
the month?
April. And
It's
yeah,
April. It's April now.
hopefully by the end of this month. And for me, by living this life of intention and not having a lot of stuff and all that things, it allows me to do things like go and walk the Camino. I'm not tied down to stuff in my home or anything like that. I can go and be out there in the world. And I do believe that's absolutely a gift of decluttering and letting go of just when we let go of things that don't serve us, we absolutely create space for what does.
That's a perfect mic drop ending.
Drop the
I
mic.
will include links, everything, the book. We gotta get that memoir going.
I know. I mean, it's done. It's really got to really fine tune. It's a lot of work. It's, you know, it's asking yourself, what is it that I'm trying to do with it? And I almost think where I ended, it's not the end and it still keeps going. There's so much that I've gone through with the medical world. It's unbelievable that, yeah. It's been a lot. I mean, I at one point had UCSF tell me, you know, when I tried to change doctors, things like, we're a large corporation. The lady said, you need to understand we're a large corporation and this is not like going to the supermarket to find blueberries. And my New York self came out and I said, thank you so much, but you need to understand you're talking about my life. So I've just had so much of that. We put doctors and all that in such a place of like, they're the end all be all and we are intimidated by them. And yeah, so all of that has to come out. I just have to figure out how to do it. It's just a lot, but I like it. I like the writing.
Well, I'm grateful for my trauma because
yeah,
our paths crossed. So
I know. Absolutely.
I'm grateful for my mess.
Yeah. And I do think that because of that, it helps other people. Really. I can't say that enough. What you holding on?